Geostats explained Chapter 21, Introductory Concepts of Sequence Analysis. So, fun fact about this chapter, the first time I tried to record it, I got about halfway through and then decided to leave the rest until the morning. But when I got up in the morning, I pulled up my podcast app and started listening to A History of Byzantium, which deleted the file. So then, last night, I recorded two-thirds of this chapter and decided to record the rest in the morning. And I made a conscious effort when I got up of not opening my podcast app to listen to A History of Byzantium. But I noticed that my phone was at 1% because I had not plugged it in all night. And before I could get the charger from the basement, it died. So I lost the second recording. So hopefully the third time's the charm, because I'm getting kind of sick of reading the same words again. 21.1, Introduction. Geoscientists have often have to interpret data that are in the form of a sequence, an ordered series of observations that has been measured over time and space. For example, on a temporal scale, you might have data for sea level that has been repeatedly sampled at the same location over several months, years, or decades, and need to know if the mean has changed, whether or not there's a consistent trend, or even repetition of the same pattern. The analysis of temporal scale data is often called time series analysis. On a spatial scale, sequential data might be obtained as a core from a borehole drilled down through sedimentary sequence or a stack of lava flows. Although such sequences are spatial, they could also be thought of as temporal because deeper rocks are likely to be older. But depth and age are unlikely to be equivalent because the thickness deposited may vary among years. Nevertheless, the same statistical methods can often be used for both temporal and spatial sequences. Data for a sequence can be measured on a ratio, interval, scale, or ordinal scale, e.g. the conductivity of well water over several months, or in a nominal scale, e.g. chemical or porosity changes with depth in a stratigraphic sequence. Analysis of a sequence might detect a trend or lack of it, or reveal features that may lead to hypotheses about temporal or spatial processes. Patterns of occurrence within a sequence may also be used as predictors of conditions of interest. For example, deposits of some minerals, e.g. uranium, are accompanied by very characteristic modifications of the geochemistry of surrounding rocks. The resultant alteration halos are especially characteristic of minerals formed by migrating uranium-rich fluids. It would be very useful to know that areas of uranium mineralization had a 40% probability of occurring below a particular type of rock showing an alteration halo, e.g. bleaching of initially hematite-rich sandstone. All of the techniques for sequence analysis described here use statistical methods explained earlier in this book. We will assume an understanding of correlation, chapter 15, regression, chapter 16, and contingency tables, chapter 18, to introduce the essential concepts, terminology, and techniques of sequence analysis and interpretation. 21.2. Sequences of ratio, interval, or ordinal scale data. A sequence of ratio, interval, or ordinal scale data measured temporally or spatially is a bivariate data set with a measured variable, e.g. sea level, and a sequence variable, e.g. time or distance, giving position within the sequence. Several things may affect the measured variable. First, there's likely to be a random component, the quote, error, discussed in chapters 10 and 16. Second, there may be a longer-term upward or downward trend. Third, there may be a regular repetitive pattern, such as the annual summer-winter fluctuation in temperature, or a longer-term repetition, e.g. climate change, that is not annual or seasonal. Fourth, parts of the sequence may be consistently higher or lower than the mean. Finally, the value of the measured variable may be somewhat dependent on the values in previous parts of the same sequence. A sequence analysis is used in an attempt to explain as much of this variation as possible in order to characterize a sequence, test for significant variation over time, and perhaps even make some very cautious predictions. 21.3. Preliminary inspection by graphing. As a first step, it is very helpful to graph the measured variable on the y-axis and the sequence variable, e.g. time, on the x-axis. For example, figure 21.1 gives the strength of the magnetic field of the Earth during the past 100 years. Many scientists interpret this decrease in the dipole moment to be a precursor to a reversal of the Earth's magnetic poles. By inspection, the decrease in field strength is approximately linear. Both variables have been measured on a ratio scale, so the first and simplest model applied to the data could be a linear regression, with field strength y as the dependent variable and time x as the independent one. Chapter 16. If the regression line appears to be a good fit for the data and the assumptions of regressions are met, it may be all you need to describe the sequence and test for a significant change in the measured variable over time. Most sequences are more complex than the one in Figure 21.1. Often, the relationship between the measured variable and the sequence variable is not linear, and there may be similarity or dissimilarity between different parts of the sequence. Detection of within-sequence similarity and dissimilarity. I won't read the caption for that figure. That's fine. As a second exploratory step to help establish the features of a sequence, it is often examined for within-sequence similarity and dissimilarity. As an example, consider an ice core from a glacier, where the percentage of impurities has been measured at regular intervals down the length of the core. Any repetition of the same or similar values or pattern, e.g. a regular cyclic change, along the length of the core may help understand the processes responsible for changes within a sequence, and can even be used to tentatively predict what might happen in the future. One way of detecting repetition is to copy the data from the core, thus giving two identical sequences. If these two sequences are laid parallel to each other and side by side, with the beginning of the quote top sequence aligned with the bottom of the beginning, with the beginning of the quote bottom one, then each of the adjacent values in the two sequences will be the same. Figure 21.2a. Next, the top sequence is successively shifted to the right by one observation at a time. After each shift, the overlapping parts of the two cores are compared to see if the compared to each other to see if they are similar or dissimilar, figure 21.2b through g. As the cores are progressively moved past one another, the most recent parts of the bottom core will occur adjacent to older and older parts of the top one. So if a pattern occurs within the sequence, then the similar or dissimilar sections will, at some stage, lie side by side, figure 21.2g. This method is straightforward, but an essential assumption is that the samples have been taken at regular intervals throughout the sequence, e.g., usually an equal length increment in geological settings. If the intervals are unequal, then it may be possible to obtain a regular sequence by excluding some data. It would be very time-consuming to visually inspect the two sequences every time they were shifted. Furthermore, you would need some way of deciding whether any similarity or dissimilarity is significant, or whether it might be occurring by chance within a sequence of random numbers. This can be done using autocorrelation, which is sometimes called serial correlation, to test for a relationship, without assuming dependence or causality. As described above, a sequence is copied to give two identical ones, which are then placed side by side, figure 21.2a. The values adjacent to each other will be the same, so at this stage the correlation, chapter 15, between the variables sequence 1 and sequence 2 will always be 1. Next, sequence 1 is shifted only one interval to the right, figure 21.2b. This shift is called a lag interval of 1, or just a lag of 1, and it places every value within sequence 2 adjacent to the value recorded at the previous interval in sequence 1. The correlation is recalculated. The process is repeated several times. The sequence is shifted another interval in the same direction, therefore giving lag intervals of 2, 3, 4, etc., and the correlation recalculated each time, figure 21.2, C through G. The number of lags that can be used will be limited by the length of a finite sequence, because every successive shift will reduce the length of overlapping section by 1. If there is marked similarity within the sequence, then the correlation at some lag intervals will be strongly positive, e.g. figure 21.2g. If there is no marked similarity or dissimilarity, and only random variation, the correlation will show some variation but have a mean of 0. If the pattern at a particular lag in one sequence is the opposite of the other and therefore markedly dissimilar, the correlation will be strongly negative, figure 21.2d. Figure 21.2. Examination of a sequence running from left to right with the most recently recorded value on the right for internal similarity and dissimilarity. A. The sequence of data on percent impurity is copied and placed alongside itself to give two identical sequences. B. The top sequence is shifted by one interval to the right, thereby putting every value in the lower sequence adjacent to that for the previous interval in the top one, and the overlapping sections compared. C through G. The process described in B is repeated. for the shift shown at G, the two sets of four cells in the overlapping section have similar values, thus indicating a pattern of similarity between different parts of the sequence. Note also for the that for the shift in D, high values in one sequence are aligned with low values in the other, indicating sections where the pattern in one is the opposite, and therefore markedly dissimilar to the other. To obtain Pearson's correlation coefficient for a set of bivariate data, Chapter 15, the means of each variable are separately calculated and used to convert the two sets of data to their z-scores using the following formulae. For a population, equation 21.1, which is copied from 15.1, and for a sample, equation 21.2, copied from 15.2. Importantly, a sequence assessed for autocorrelation is usually treated as a population because it contains all of the data for that sequence. Therefore, when calculating z-scores, the mean and variance of the entire sequence are used, not just the sample means and variances for the overlapping sections. Using z-scores, the Pearson correlation coefficient for a population is equation 21.3. For autocorrelation that compares the measured variable to itself, the use of Zx is inappropriate and Zy is used instead for equation 21.4. Equation 21.4 gives the autocorrelation for a lag of 0, but this will always be 1. As the lag interval increases, the number of overlapping values will decrease, so the actual number of values being correlated will be fewer, figure 21.2. To calculate the autocorrelation between different lags of the same sequence, two modifications to equation 21.4 are needed. First, to specify the actual parts of the sequences being compared, the numerator of equation 21.4 is changed to that shown in equation 21.5, where k is the lag number. This may look complex, but working through the equation using an example will help. For a lag k equals 10 and I equals 1, then ZY initial, which is ZY1 and the first value in the sequence, will be paired with ZY initial plus K, which is ZY11 and the 11th value in the sequence. For the same lag of 10, then I equals 2, the numerator will pair with, when I equals 2, the numerator will pair with ZYI, which is ZY2, with ZYI plus K, which is ZY12, etc. This ensures that the appropriate z-scores are multiplied together. Second, because the number of values being correlated is the total within the sequence minus the lag number, e.g. at lag 0 for a length of 50, all 50 values will be used, but a lag of 5 will use only 45. The denominator of the equation becomes n minus k, where k is the lag number. Note also that the value above the sum symbol is also n minus k, which restricts the z-scores being used to those over for the overlapping sections of the two cores, figure 21.2. Then we have equation 21.5 here. Once the values for the correlation coefficient at each lag interval have been calculated, they're plotted as a line graph with r on the y-axis and the lag number on the x-axis. This graph is called a correlogram, and several examples are given in figure 21.3. The correlation coefficient at lag 0 will always have an R of 1, which is why correlograms produced by statistical packages often only plot lag intervals of 1 and more. 21.4.1, interpreting the correlogram. The shape of the relationship between the Pearson correlation coefficient R plotted against lag is a very good indication of the characteristics of the sequence. A sequence that shows no overall trend and only random variation with no marked internal similarity or dissimilarity will have a value of R that starts at 1 for lag 0, but will very rapidly decrease and has an expected average correlation of R equals 0 at all higher lags, figure 21.3a. This is an example of a stationary sequence because the original sequence variable shows no overall trend upward or downward, no overall upward or downward trend. If the value of the variable has some dependence on the value of the previous interval or intervals, i.e. the value for yt is related to that for yt minus 1 or even yt minus 2 and yt minus 3, then R will show up a strong positive or strong negative autocorrelation at low lags, but an average of 0 for higher ones, figure 21.3b. A trend over time, whether it is decreasing or increasing, will give a value of R that starts at 1, but then slowly decreases to a marked negative correlation as lag increases. Figure 21.3c and d. These are non-stationary sequences because the original variable shows an overall trend. If there is a con- consistent positive or negative trend, plus random variation, figure 21.3e, then R will fluctuate but will be markedly positive at low lags, steadily decrease as lag increases, and eventually become markedly negative. Here too, the sequence is non-stationary. If there is no overall trend but regular repetition of similar or dissimilar sections within a sequence, then the correlogram will show autocorrelation at regular lag intervals, figure 21.3f. In this example, even though there is fluctuation, there is no overall long-term positive or negative trend, so the series is stationary. Finally, if there is a long-term positive or negative trend plus repetition within the sequence, then the correlogram will show marked positive autocorrelation at low lags, low lag intervals, and markedly negative autocorrelation at high ones, but will also fluctuate because of the repetition. This is a good example of how two sources of variation can affect the value of R. In summary, the amount of autocorrelation will be affected by A, random variation, B, the strength of any long-term trend in non-stationary sequences, and C, whether there is similarity among different parts of a sequence. Therefore, when both B and C are present, the values of R in some parts of the correlogram can be misleading, e.g. figure 21.3g, and it is necessary to remove the long-term trend in order to assess the extent of repetition. This is discussed later in the chapter. The correlogram can also be used to test if the amount of autocorrelation is significant. If the original sequence consists of only random case A, only random variation case A in figure 21.3, then for lags of 1 or more, the value of R would only be expected to vary at random, around a mean of 0. The expected variance of the correlation coefficient R for a random sequence of length n at a particular lag time k is equation 21.6. For example, if you have a sequence containing 40 values and you calculate the autocorrelation at lag 4, then the expected variance at that lag is 1 divided by the sum of 40 minus 4 plus 3, which is sigma squared r equals 0.0256. From equation 21.6, it's clear that the variance is affected by the sequence length. For a short sequence, the expected variance will be large, but will decrease as n increases. And the amount of lag, as k increases, the variance will also increase. The expected standard deviation of r is just the square root of equation 21.6. For a population, 95% of the values of the correlation coefficient are expected to fall within 1.96 standard deviations of r equals 0. We have equation 21.7. So if the value of r is outside this range, it shows significant autocorrelation at p is less than 0.05. I'm going to go back and read the caption. Figure 21.3. Examples of sequences, left-hand figure, of a variable versus time and the resultant correlogram, right-hand figure, where Pearson's R is plotted against increasing lag. A. A random stationary sequence with no trend will give a correlogram where R is rapidly declining to a mean of 0. B. Dependence on previous values but no trend will give positive or negative autocorrelation at low lags. Only positive autocorrelation is shown here. C and D. An increasing or decreasing linear trend will show marked positive autocorrelation at low lags, but marked negative autocorrelation at high lags, the latter because as lag increases, the similarity between the z-scores in the overlapping sections decreases to the point where they are markedly dissimilar. E. Decreasing trend with random variation superimposed. F. A regular cyclic component will give a regular pattern in the correlogram. G. When there is a trend plus within sequence repetition, the correlogram will show the gradual decrease as well as the fluctuations caused by the repetition. The 95% confidence limits can be drawn on the correlogram as two curved lines with a significant autocorrelation, with significant autocorrelation occurring whenever R is outside this range. Importantly, any test of the significance of R will only give a realistic result when the sequence is relatively long, e.g. at least 40 to 50 observations, and the number of lags for which R is calculated are relatively few. This is because the length of the overlapping sections will get smaller and smaller as lag is increased, so the correlation will be shorter and shorter parts of the sequence, as shown in figure 21.2. Therefore, it is recommended that values of R are only calculated for lags up to 1/4 of the full sequence length. Despite this, statistical packages often give autocorrelations for every possible lag of even short sequences, so you need to be extremely cautious about the reliability of statistics for lag numbers more than about a quarter of any sequence length. The formula for the autocorrelation given here is probably the easiest to understand, but there are several variations, including ones that treat the sequence as a sample and not a population. All will give similar results as long as the test is limited to the first quarter of a relatively long sequence. Most statistical packages will give a graph of R and its 95% confidence limits, and there are some examples in the following section. Some statistical packages also include a table showing the Box-Liang statistic that in some texts and web pages is called the Liang Box statistic, which indicates the extent of autocorrelation for the combined set of lags up to and including the one for which the Box-Liang statistic is given. For example, the Box-Liang statistic at lag 10 gives the extent of autocorrelation within lags 1 through 10 inclusive, and you still need to examine the correlogram to identify which ones are significant. The formula for the Box-Liang statistic is equation 21.8, where n is the number of values in the original sequence, k is the lag number, h is the maximum lag number for the range being tested, and rk is the autocorrelation at each lag. The size of q is affected by the cumulative amount of autocorrelation within the sequence up to the point at which it is calculated. 21.5, cross-correlation. Cross-correlation is very similar to autocorrelation, but is used to compare two different sequences, which may even be for different variables. Therefore, the two series are unlikely to show perfect correlation at lag zero. For example, you might want to compare data for the flow discharge of water in a stream with the water use patterns at a nearby golf course for the same, or a longer time period, to see if there's any relationship, and if so, what the lag is between these, in order to know how long it takes for irrigation to affect discharge. For cross-correlation, the method for obtaining the correlation coefficient at different lags is similar to the one described above, but because two different sequences are being compared and the comparison is usually restricted to parts of each sequence, the overlapping sections are treated as samples. 21.6, regression analysis. A sequence of ratio, interval, or ordinal scale data can often be analyzed by regression, provided the assumptions of this procedure are met. Chapter 16. First, the characteristics of the sequence are determined by exploratory testing, including autocorrelation, as described above. A regression model is chosen, fitted to the sequence, and assessed to see if it is appropriate. If necessary, the model is refined. The assessment and refinement steps may have to be repeated several times to develop a model to the stage where it is a good description. Finally, the model is used to draw conclusions about the sequence. These steps are summarized in Figure 21.4. Figure 21.4, the general steps for using regression to analyze a univariate sequence. The first box says, establish the characteristics of the sequence by inspection, e.g. graphing, and exploratory testing, e.g. a test for autocorrelation. The second box, which the first box leads into, says, decide on a regression model and fit it to the data. Then that leads into, assess whether the model is a good description of the data. A good description of the sequence, which feeds into two paths. The first path leads to the model is a poor description, and then to refine the model, and then back around to assess whether the model is a good description of the sequence. The other path that leads from assess whether the model is a good description of the sequence leads to model is a good description, and then to use the model to summarize the characteristics of the sequence and perhaps make cautious predictions. The coefficient of determination, R squared, shows how much of the variation is explained by the regression. A plot of the residuals will help indicate if the regression model is an appropriate analysis for the data. Chapter 16. The residuals, y initial minus y caret, have another use in sequence analysis. By plotting them against the independent variable x, the regression line of best fit, y caret, is converted to a horizontal line where all values of y caret are equal to zero, with the same residuals dispersed about it. This effectively removes the variation explained by the line of best fit from the sequence and has two advantages. First, if the regression line is a good fit for the data, the plot of the residuals will now be independent of any long-term trend. This is one way of detrending a sequence, and the detrended data can be used to investigate autocorrelation caused by repetition within the sequence without confounding the effect of any general trend upon the value of R. Second, if the residuals are not evenly distributed about zero, it suggests that there is still variation present that is not accounted for by the line of best fit. The pattern of the residuals about the line may indicate the characteristics of this variation, from which you could make a choice of additional terms to incorporate into the regression equation in an attempt to improve the fit of the model. A further step is often used in sequence analysis to draw a correlogram of the residuals. If the regression is a good description of the data, the values of R at lags of one or more in this correlogram should only show random fluctuation around a mean of zero. Significant values of R will indicate any remaining autocorrelation. Choosing an appropriate model requires good understanding of complex regression. Statistical packages can do extremely complex autoregression analyses, but these models have quite stringent assumptions and are often misapplied and misinterpreted. Therefore, if the sequence appears complex, it is important to seek expert advice. Here we give a straightforward example of how to use some of the regression models. 21.7, simple linear regression. For a sequence that shows an apparently linear trend over time, as in figure 21.1, the correlogram should be similar to figure 21.3, C or D, but you might not even draw one for such an obvious relationship. The sequence could be analyzed using simple linear regression. Equation 21.9 copied from 16.1, where y is the measured variable, a is the intercept, b is the slope, and x is the sequence variable, e.g. time. A test of the slope of the line will show you if there is a significant change in y over the sequence. You then need to check that the data satisfy the assumptions of regression, including whether the residuals y initial minus caret y initial show a relatively even spread around zero when plotted against x, chapter 16. Here's an example using turbidity, the opacity of a fluid caused by the presence of small particles in suspension, which can be estimated with a nephelometer that measures the amount of scattering when a beam of light is shown through the fluid. The units of turbidity are called nephelometric turbidity units, NTU. Figure 21.5a gives turbidity of water in a well TGM006 for 4 years after it was drilled in central Queensland in January 2000. By inspection, a straight line with a negative slope is likely to be a good description of the relationship, and this was so obvious that a correlogram was not drawn. The regression line y equals 407 minus 5.02x, shown in figure 21.5a, has a highly significant negative slope. F1, 46 equals 36,984.8, p is less than 0.001, and explains almost all of the variation because r squared is 0.999. That's it. The unstandardized residuals plotted against time in figure 21.5b show a fairly even distribution about zero. Finally, a correlogram of these residuals, figure 21.5c, does not show any remaining autocorrelation, and thus no significant additional variation. In summary, a simple linear regression appears to be a good model of the data and shows a significant decrease over time. From this, you could even cautiously forecast turbidity in future years, although your prediction may not be correct. Figure 21.5. Regression line A, B, unstandardized residuals, and C, correlogram of the unstandardized residuals, including 95% confidence limits for the turbidity of water measured in NTU from well TGM006 in central Queensland at monthly intervals from January 2000 to December 2003. More complex regression. Often the relationship between the measured variable and the sequence variable is not linear. One way of modeling a more complex relationship is to expand the simple linear regression in equation 21.9 by adding additional constants and powers of x. These equations are called polynomials of increasing degrees. The simple linear regression equation is a first-degree polynomial that gives a straight-line relationship, equation 21.10 modified from 21.9, that can be expanded to a second-degree quadratic polynomial, which gives a line with one change in direction by adding a second constant that is multiplied by the square of x, and a third degree cubic polynomial that gives a line with two changes of direction by adding a third constant multiplied by the cube of x. Oh, by the way, these were equations 21.11 and 21.12. And then we have 21, and a fourth degree quartic polynomial that gives three changes in direction. That's equation 21.13. And so on for additional constants b and increasing powers of x. As the number of constants and powers of x increases, the regression line will become a better and better fit to the data. Eventually, when the number of terms in the polynomial is one less than the number of data points within the sequence, the equation will be run through all the points and thus be a perfect fit. But this is unlikely to be useful for anything except a very short sequence, because the equation will be extremely long and complex. Often, however, a good approximation of a long-term trend can be achieved by using only second or third degree polynomials, which may also detrend the sequence. The regression can be tested for significance, easily visualized, and used for interpolation and prediction. To illustrate the successively better fit of the increasingly complex regression models, figure 21.6 shows turbidity of water from a second well, TGM 013, where the relationship is clearly not linear. First, a linear model using equation 21.10 does not show a significant relationship between turbidity and time. And the regression line is an extremely poor fit, figure 21.6a, with an R-squared of only 0.042. A plot of the unstandardized residuals, figure 21.6b, confirms the use of linear regression is inappropriate because the data do not occur in a band across the horizontal line for zero residual variation. Nor has the regression detrended the data. The plot of residuals is similar to the original sequence with a pronounced long-term nonlinear trend. Finally, the correlogram of the residuals in figure 21.6c also shows highly significant correlation at low and high lags, which confirms that there is remaining variation not explained by the regression. Second, a quadratic model, equation 21.11, fitted to the data is highly significant, and a far better fit than the linear model, with an R-squared of 0.989, figure 21.7a. A graph of the residuals, figure 21.7b, shows that the regression appears to be a very good fit for the data, and the correlogram of the residuals, figure 21.7c, confirms this, with no significant autocorrelation at any lag. Finally, a cubic model, equation 21.12, is also significant, with an R-squared of 0.990, indicating a slight improvement over the quadratic and a very good fit to the data. The residuals and their correlogram are consistent with this, figure 21.8. In summary, both the quadratic and cubic polynomials are very good fits to the data and can account for almost all the change in the measured variable over the distance, over the sequence. There is a significant nonlinear relationship between turbidity and time, and with high turbidity during the middle part of the sequence. Even though the regression fits the data, it cannot be used to predict turbidity in the future because the values will be negative, and negative turbidity does not exist. We have deliberately chosen this example to illustrate the danger of predicting beyond the measured limits of a sequence, but the same caution applies even when the predicted values seem realistic. From the value of R squared, the linear model is a very poor fit to the data. In contrast, the quadratic model is a good fit, and the cubic model is a slight improvement over the quadratic. There's no point in using a more complex, higher-order polynomial if it doesn't give a significantly improved fit over a simpler one, and this can be tested for significance by a straightforward extension of the ANOVA used to assess the significance of a regression, Chapter 16. Most statistical packages give a table of results for the ANOVA that tests for the departure from a line with zero slope, Chapter 16, which includes the sum of squares, degrees of freedom, and mean squares for the regression. Table 21.1a gives these for the linear, quadratic, and cubic models fitted to the data in figures 21.6 to 21.8. Each expansion of the polynomial is additive, e.g. equations 21.10 to 21.13, and so are their sums of squares. Therefore, the sum of squares for the improvement, if any, of the quadratic model compared to the linear regression can be obtained by subtracting the sum of squares for the linear model from the sum of squares for the quadratic, giving the sum of squares for the difference, SS difference. The number of degrees of freedom for the difference, DF difference, is also calculated by subtraction, table 21.1b. The mean square for the difference is SS divided by DF difference, and the F statistic is calculated by dividing this quantity by the error of the higher polynomial, table 21.1. The same method is used to assess whether the cubic model is an improvement compared to the quadratic. In the example in table 21.1, the additional variation explained by the quadratic over the linear model is highly significant, but the cubic model is not a significant improvement over the quadratic, so the latter is used to describe the relationship. Figure 21.6. Turbidity of water from well TGM 013 in central Queensland from early 2000 to late 2003. A simple linear regression heavy line is clearly not a good fit to the points. B, unstandardized residuals. C, correlogram of the residuals for a linear model fitted to the data. The residuals are not evenly distributed and there is extreme autocorrelation. Figure 21.7. Turbidity of water from well TGM 013 in central Queensland from early 2000 to late 2003. A quadratic regression heavy line is a good fit to the points. B, unstandardized residuals. C, correlogram of the residuals for a quadratic model fitted to the data does not show significant autocorrelation. Figure 21.8. Turbidity of water from well TGM 013 in central Queensland from early 2000 to late 2003. A cubic regression heavy line is a good fit for the points, but appears little better than the quadratic in figure 21.7. B, unstandardized residuals. C, the correlogram of the residuals does not show significant autocorrelation. 21.1.8, polynomial modeling of a spatial sequence, hydrogen diffusion in a single crystal of pyroxene. There are many common geological phenomena where polynomial approximations are appropriate, particularly spatial data such as gravity models, porosity, and other fundamental rock properties that vary with depth, shoreline changes, as well as distortion and translation corrections in image analysis. For example, different types of diffusion processes are often described with polynomials. Figure 21.9 shows data from an experiment to measure hydrogen diffusion in a single crystal of pyroxene. A water-rich crystal was cooked in a furnace so that the hydrogen could diffuse out. After the experiment, the crystal was sliced open and the concentration of hydrogen measured from edge to edge. The relationship between hydrogen concentration and location in the crystal is best described by a third-order polynomial, figure 21.9. Table 21.1. The amount of additional variation explained by progressive polynomial expansions can be assessed by subtracting the sum of squares for the lower polynomial from the next highest one to give the sum of squares for the difference, SS difference. The number of degrees of freedom for the difference, DF difference, is also obtained by subtraction. The mean square for the difference is SS difference divided by DF difference, and the F statistic is calculated by dividing the resultant MS difference by the error of the higher polynomial. ANOVA statistics for each of the three regression models. B. ANOVA table for the relative importance of each additional expansion of the regression equation. In this example, the additional variation explained by the quadratic model is a highly significant improvement over the linear one, but there is no significant improvement of the cubic model over the quadratic. Figure 21.9. Hydrogen concentration in parts per million measured from edge to edge across a single olivine crystal after a dehydration experiment to characterize the diffusivity of the hydrogen. A cubic regression line, heavy line, is a good fit to the points. The data and figure have been simplified from Woods et al., 2000. 21.1. Simple autoregression. Often a correlogram will show significant autocorrelation at low lags. This may be because the series is non-stationary, e.g. figure 21.3d, but for a stationary series or one that has been detrended, low lag autocorrelation means that there is a consistent relationship between successive values. For example, a sequence might show a significant dependence for the value of the measured variable at time t on time t minus 1, where t can be any point within the sequence. this dependence can be modeled by autoregression, meaning that the data is set. That data set is regressed upon itself and is of particular interest in fields such as finance and meteorology, where sequence analysis is used with somewhat mixed success in attempts to predict future values. Here's an example. In some parts of the world, annual rainfall has been found significantly to be related to annual rainfall during the previous year, or years. E.g., the value of the measured variable at time t is related to that at t minus 1, or even t minus 2 or t minus 3. Knowledge of this relationship and its reliability might help predict future rainfall. Figure 21.10a shows annual rainfall at the Neostrata 4 open-cut coal mine in Western Australia from 1961 to 2008. During years when annual rainfall exceeds 350 millimeters, the output of the mine has to be reduced because of the accumulation of stormwater runoff in the floor of the cut. So some indication of the rain expected during the next year would help in planning extractive operations. Figure 21.10a shows fluctuation but no obvious longer-term trend, and therefore a stationary series, which was confirmed by the linear regression having a slope close to zero. The regression is an extremely poor fit. R squared equals 0.001. A correlogram of the original data shows significant positive autocorrelation at lag 1 and an almost significant negative autocorrelation at lag 2, figure 21.10b. A scatter plot of the residuals against time is relatively evenly spread, but nevertheless shows a pattern where the values for successive years are often similar, figure 21.10c. This was confirmed by the correlogram of the residuals, which is almost the same as the one for the original data, figure 21.10d. First, considering the autocorrelation at lag 1, a regression equation which only included autoregression on the previous year's rainfall was fitted to the data. Equation 21.14, which was significant, although the amount of variation expressed by the regression was still low, R squared equals 0.105. A graph of the residuals is more evenly distributed, but still shows some similarity between successive values. A correlogram of the residuals now shows no autocorrelation at lag 1, but significant autocorrelation at lag 2, figure 21.11. Sorry, 21.11. I guess I'm doing them that way now. The analysis was rerun with the inclusion of a second term to include the annual rainfall from 2 years before, equation 21.15. This, too, was significant and explains more than a quarter of the variation, R squared equals 0.257. Note that for this example, the constant for the first lag is positive, but the one for the second lag is negative, showing a positive relationship with the previous year's rainfall, but a negative one for the year before that. A graph of the residuals, figure 21.12a, has a more even spread of points, and the correlogram of these residuals, figure 21.12b, shows no low lag autocorrelation, but two significant values at higher lags. Finally, although the rainfall is predicted from equation 21.15 is not identical to actual rainfall, it is a surprisingly good indicator, predictor, of years in the category, quote, rainfall exceeds 350 millimeters, unquote, and is therefore useful in planning extractive operations at Neostrata 4 during the coming year, figure 21.12c. This is another example of how a complex sequence can be modeled by adding additional terms to a regressed equation. A regression equation, sorry. Figure 21.10. Annual rainfall, A, in millimeters for the Neostrata 4 mine, Western Australia, from 1961 to 2008 inclusive. B, correlogram of original data. C, residuals from a linear regression. D, correlogram of the residuals. Note that B and D are extremely similar, thus showing that the linear regression accounts for little variation in the data. 21.11, autoregression analysis at t minus 1 for the rainfall data at Neostrata 4. Residuals after autoregression at t minus 1. B, correlogram of the residuals. There is significant negative autocorrelation remaining at lag 2. Figure 21.12. Autoregression analysis at t minus 1 and t minus 2 for the rainfall data at Neostrata 4. A, residuals from an autoregression at t minus 1 and t minus 2. B, parallelogram of the residuals. The autoregression model has accounted for the autocorrelation at low lags. C. Actual rainfall, solid line, and predicted rainfall, dashed line, from equation 21.15. 21.10. More complex series with a cyclic component. Even a relatively complex time series can often be modeled, detrended, and interpreted using autocorrelation and regression. Figure 21.13 shows sea level measured in millimeters relative to a set reference point at Port Mogmogo in the Western Pacific every December from 1960 to 2009. This relationship is more complex than the previous examples. The sequence does not appear to be stationary because sea level is generally lower during the middle and higher at the beginning and end of the sequence. There's also a marked component of peaks and troughs. A linear regression is clearly inappropriate for this non-stationary series, so quadratic and cubic polynomials were fitted in an attempt to model the general trend. Both were significant, table 21.2, and explained about half of the variation despite the superimposed cyclic component. The sums of squares for any improvement of the cubic over the quadratic and of the quadratic over the linear model were calculated by subtraction using the method in table 21.1. This showed the cubic was not significantly better than the quadratic, which was highly significant improvement over the linear model, so the quadratic was used. The quadratic line of best fit in figure 21.13a appears to follow a general trend. The residuals are shown in figure 21.13b. A regression of the residuals does not differ significantly from zero, which shows that the quadratic has detrended the data to produce a stationary plot. Nevertheless, the residuals still show a cyclic pattern, and a parallelogram of the residuals still shows gross apparently cyclic autocorrelation, figure 21.13c. At this stage, you might decide the analysis is sufficient and conclude that the sequence shows a significant overall trend and a fairly regular repetitive component. A more detailed regression model could include a component based on a regular pattern, such as a sine wave. These models are described in more advanced texts and can easily be applied using statistical software. Finally, although the quadratic model appears to be a good fit for the overall trend in the sequence, it may not be a reliable predictor of future sea level, figure 21.13a. Here, too, we've deliberately used an example to emphasize the risk of extrapolating outside the measured range of a variable. Figure 21.1.13. Oh, I guess I'll start with table 21.2. Regression statistics for the linear, quadratic, and cubic relationship fitted to the data for sea level shown in figure 21.13. The value of R squared is extremely low for the linear relationship, and the slope of the line is not significant. In contrast, both the quadratic and cubic relationships are significant. P is less than 0.001 in each case, and both have detected a significant long-term change over time despite the cyclic component. Figure 21.13. Data for sea level in relation to a set reference point at Port Mogmogo from 1960 to 2009. There appears to be a cyclic component superimposed over a trend that is not linear. The quadratic line of best fit, heavy line, appears to approximate the overall trend, but not the strong cyclic component. Residuals are fairly evenly distributed about the line, showing that the quadratic model has detrended the data, but there's still a cyclic pattern with time. A parallelogram of residuals confirms the strong cyclic pattern remaining in the detrended data. 21.11. Statistical packages and time series analysis. If you're working with a relatively simple time series, the methods given here may be all you need. The availability of statistical software has made the analysis of time series easy, especially when drawing parallelograms and applying complex regression models. But care is needed when interpreting the results. 21.12, some very important limitations and cautions. A parallelogram gives the correlation coefficient at numerous lags of the same sequence. Therefore, even if the data in a sequence only vary at random, for a significant level of alpha, you would expect this proportion of values of R to fall outside the confidence interval simply by chance. For example, with a random sequence and the significance level set at 5%, you would expect 5% of values of R to be outside the 95% confidence interval and therefore be considered, quote, significant. This is a type 1 error, as discussed in Chapter 9, and because of it, the occasional isolated significant value of R in the correlogram may mean very little. In contrast, significance at low lags, several successive significant lags, or a repeated pattern of significant positive and negative values, e.g. Figure 21.13c, suggests that autocorrelation is, quote, real. Equation 21.5 for autocorrelation given earlier in this chapter is a relatively long sequence where the mean and the standard deviation can be treated as parameters of the population. For shorter sequences, this equation needs to be modified because it may be more appropriate to treat the sequence or the overlapping sections as samples. For a long series, the slightly different equations give very similar results. It is extremely important to remember that the conclusions drawn are only as reliable as the data. A very short part of a sequence, e.g. years 1963 to 8 of figure 21.13a, may show an extremely significant increase or decrease over time, but may not be representative of the entire sequence. Therefore, as a general rule, the reliability of the conclusions increases with sequence length. When assessing autocorrelation, provided the sequence is long, e.g. at least 40 to 50 observations, and the number of calculated lags are few, e.g. up to no more than one quarter of the sequence length, the correlogram should give a realistic estimate. For shorter sequences or very high lag numbers relative to the length of the sequence, the estimate may be unrealistic. This is why most statistical programs for calculating autocorrelation stop when the lag interval exceeds a certain proportion of the sequence length. Most statistical packages now include methods for time series analysis, including seasonal or repeated effects and autoregressive functions. These methods need to be used and interpreted with care, and you should seek expert advice if a sequence is complex. 21.13. Sequences of nominal scale data. Often a sequence consists of data measured at a nominal scale, Chapter 3, where the variable consists of numbers in discrete and mutually exclusive categories, such as different rock types. For example, you might have data for a core in which the type of rock has been recorded at regular intervals, or whenever it changed. For both sets of data, you're likely to be interested in whether each type of rock occurs at random, or whether there is significant dependence, such as type A being more likely to occur after type B. A sequence can be classified as A, random, where no state shows any dependence on the one occurring before it, B, partially dependent, where a particular state is more likely... B, partially dependent, where a particular state is more likely to occur after another, but will not always do so, and C, fully deterministic, where a particular state always occurs after another. Partially dependent sequences are examples of Markov chains, where the occurrence of successive states is neither entirely random nor absolutely deterministic. 21.13.1. Sequences that have been sampled at regular intervals. Nominal scale data that have been recorded at regular intervals can be analyzed for association using the chi-square test described in Chapter 18. For example, a petroleum geologist will log well cores of shallow water stratigraphic sequences in terms of whether they represent sedimentary deposits from constant C, rising R, or falling F sea level, based on sedimentation rates and whether the sediments coarsen up or fine upwards and downwards. In the following example, sequence stratigraphy is given at least 124 successive depth increments at 1 meter each. I'm not going to read them all. First, to establish the relative proportions of C, R, and F, the number of occurrences of each are divided by the grand total. For the 124 sampling units above, there are 35 cases, 0.282 of C, 61, 0.492 of R, and 28, 0.226 of F. Therefore, if you were to take one sampling unit at random from within each sequence, the values in brackets are the probabilities of it being each tracked type. Although it is useful to know the probability any sample unit chosen at random will contain a particular tract, questions such as, quote, if I drill down to this deposit and find tract type C, what are the probabilities that the tract in the next increment down will be C or F or R, unquote, are likely to be of more interest. To find the conditional probabilities that each type of C, R, or F is followed by C, R, or F, you need to work downwards through the sequence, and for each increment, count the number of times C is followed by each of C, R, and F, when R is followed by each of C, R, and F, and when F is followed by each of C, R, and F. These data are called transitions, even when several successive sampling units contain the same tract type, so there is no change from increment to increment. The total number of transitions will usually be one less than the number of sampling units in a sequence, because there may not be anything recorded above the top one. For the 124 sampling units in the sequence above, there are 123 transitions. Table 21.3. Data for the number of transitions from tract types C, R, and F to types C, R, and F. The probability that each tract type will be succeeded in the next increment by C, R, or F is obtained by dividing the number of transitions in each category by the total, by the row total, as is shown in brackets. The numbers of cases where tracts C, R, and F transition to C, R, and F are in Table 21.3. Each row gives the data where a particular tract type is followed by another, C, R, or F, and each column gives the data for cases where each tract type is preceded by another. Therefore, for the 35 cases of, quote, from C, unquote, the next increment within the sequence is C in 9 out of 35 cases, R in 18 out of 35 cases, and F in 8 out of 35 cases. Depending on the numbers in each of these, there will be three categories by their row total that gives the probabilities that each tract type will be, that tract type C will be followed in the next increment by type C, type R, or type F. The same procedure applies to tract R and tract F and has been done in Table 21.3. These conditional probabilities can be used to test whether the likelihoods of finding tract types C, R, and F differ from their actual proportions within the sequence. This comparison is shown in Table 21.4. The expected numbers of each transition, if the three tract types occur at random, are the number of cases from the, quote, from tract type multiplied by the proportion of tract type C or R or F within the entire sequence. For example, there are 35 cases of transitions, quote, from C, so the expected number of these followed by R is 35 times the proportion of R in the entire sequence equals 35 times 0.492 equals 17.2. The expected values are in Table 21.4. Table 21.4. Data for the number of cases where tract types C, R, and F transition to types C, R, and F, together with the expected numbers of each transition calculated using the proportions of each tract type in a sequence. The data are in the form of a 3x3 contingency table, Chapter 18, from which expected values can be calculated and compared to those observed with a chi-square test, provided in no more than 20% of expected frequencies are less than 5. Provided no more than 25... Ah, God... The data are in the form of a 3x3 contingency table, Chapter 18, from which expected values can be calculated and compared to those observed with a chi-square test, provided no more than 20% of expected frequencies are less than 5. Section 18.3.1. There we go. That's equation 21.16 copied from 18.1. With the number of degrees of freedom being the product of from states minus 1 times 2 states minus 1, which in this case is 4. If this assumption cannot be met, a randomization test can be used, section 18.3.3. By inspection, there is not a great deal of difference between any observed and expected value in table 21.4, so you're unlikely to be surprised that the value of chi square is not significant. The probability of striking a particular tract type 1 meter lower in the sequence is not conditional upon the type present in the preceding sample. The sequence only shows randomness and therefore does not have Markovian properties. 21.13.2. Sequences for which only true transitions have been recorded. For sequence data where only transitions that are a true state true change of state, i.e. from one rock type to another, have been recorded, a more complex analysis is needed. Table 21.5 gives data for the true transitions in the sequence used above. For this type of data, the cells along the diagonal of the matrix are always vacant. A state cannot change to itself. These are called embedded sequences. Importantly, and unlike in the previous example, it is not appropriate to treat the matrix, table 21.5, as a contingency table, where perhaps the three vacant cells are each incorrectly given the value of 0. And there has been a great deal of debate about how to analyze such data. The recommended solution is to create a set of expected values using matrix algebra, and Davis, 2002, gives a fully worked example. An embedded sequence can also be classified as A, random, B, partially independent, where a particular state is more likely to occur after another, but will not always do so, and C, fully deterministic, where a particular state will not always occurs after another. Embedded sequences with significant partial dependence have Markovian properties. Table 21.5. The number of true transitions from state C to R or F, state R to F or state R to C or F, and state F to R or C. The matrix has vacant cells along the diagonal because a state cannot transition to itself. 21.14. Records of the repeated occurrence of an event. Another type of sequence often analyzed by Earth scientists is the repeated occurrence of the same type of event over time or distance. For example, you might have historical data for the dates of all floods that exceeded a stream rise of 2 meters recorded from the 1850 to 2009 for the Santo Mindelo River. Table 21.6, and need to know if the frequency of occurrence of flood events of this severity is changing over time. Data for the frequency of an event can be extracted from the temporal records by subdividing the list of dates of occurrence, here years, into several time intervals of equal duration, and then counting the numbers of data of the event within each. This is the same procedure used to construct a histogram, section 3.3.2, and has been done for an interval length of 10 years in table 21.7. If there is no overall change in frequency over the sequence of the numbers within each interval will be similar, and a regression line of the number of events against time will be expected to have a slope of zero. The same method can be used where data are records of distance. Table 21.6. The dates of all floods greater than 2 meters recorded from 1850 to 2009 for the Santo Mindelo River. Note that there was more than one flood in some years and none in the final year of 2009. 21.7. The numbers of all floods greater than 2.0 meters within each of a 10-year period, each 10-year period from 1850 to 2009 for the Santo Mindelo River. Importantly, the quality of data extracted in this way from temporal or spatial records will depend on the length of the chosen interval, just as the interval width of a histogram will affect the graphical summary of data, section 3.3.2. Here, however, the interval width is particularly important. If it is too short, there may be many cases where the extracted data are zero, which will bias the regression analysis. But as it increases, there will be fewer and fewer intervals, which will reduce the number of data and degrees of freedom. You need to compromise and choose a width that preferably results in at least 80% of intervals containing one or more cases, and if possible, have at least 6 intervals. A linear regression analysis showed the sequence in table 21.7 did not differ in slope from a line of zero. So there is no evidence for a change in the frequency of greater than 2-meter floods of the Santo Mindelo River from 1850 to 2009, figure 21.14a. Depending on the pattern shown by the data, you might also want to consider fitting a more complex regression, e.g. a quadratic. For the relationship shown in figure 21.14a, this does not appear necessary. Raw data for the repeated occurrence of an event within a sequence, e.g. table 21.6, can also be used to test whether the event is occurring at random, whether cases are clustered together or are more evenly spaced than expected by chance. Data for the length of the interval elapsing between successive events can be extracted by working through a sequence such as table 21.6. For example, the second flood in the sequence, which was recorded in 1851, occurred 1 year after the first record in 1850, giving an interval of 1 year. The third flood, 1852, also occurred 1 year after the previous one, 1851, but the fourth, also in 1852, occurred 0 years after the previous. The full set of extracted data is given in Table 21.8. The shortest interval between floods is 0 years, and the longest is 7, with the most frequent between flood interval being 1 year, 41.1% of cases. Table 21.8 also gives the percentage of cases remaining or surviving with intervals longer than the one specified. For example, 76.7% of intervals between floods are longer than 0 years, but only 8.9% are longer than 3 years. These summary data can be used to produce a survival graph, often called an empirical survival graph, because it has been derived from a set of empirical or, quote, real, rather than, quote, theoretical data, where the x-axis gives interval length from zero up to the longest, here 7 years, and the y-axis gives the percentage of cases with intervals of longer duration than the one specified by the value of x, figure 21.14b. The graph will always have a negative slope, and if the event occurs at random, it should be a declining exponential. This is difficult to assess, so the logarithm of the percentage survival against interval length is usually plotted instead, figure 21.14c, and should be a straight line of negative slope. For events that show pronounced clustering of the empirical surviving graph will initially drop steeply and then become flatter, while a more regular than expected series will give an empirical survival graph with a gentle negative slope, followed by a steeper decrease at longer intervals, figure 21.15. Incidentally, survival graphs are used in many fields, including studies of human longevity, where the use of, quote, survivors is particularly appropriate. Figure 21.14, the number of floods greater than 2 meters occurring within every 10-year interval from 1850 to 2009 for the Santo Mindelo River. A, the heavy line shows the line of best fit for linear regression. B, the empirical survival function for the intervals between floods of greater than 2 meters from 1850 to 2009 showing the percentage of intervals longer than the duration shown on the x-axis. C, logarithm of the percentage survivors. A line drawn through the points in C would be relatively straight, so the event of a flood greater than 2 meters appears to occur at random in time. Table 21.8. The number of years elapsing between successive floods of greater than 2 meters from 1850 to 2009 for the Santo Mindelo River. Column 1 gives the interval elapsing between successive floods. Column 2, the number of cases for each. Column 3, the percentage of total cases. And column 4, the percentage of cases remaining, the survivors, having longer intervals. Figure 21.15. The pattern expected for the logarithmic empirical survival function for a sequence when an event within the sequence occurs A, at random, B, relatively regularly, and C, in clusters. 21.15. Conclusion. The methods given here are a broad conceptual introduction to the essentials of sequence analysis. For ratio, interval, or ordinal scale sequences, regression analysis is becoming increasingly popular, especially because statistical software that can run extremely complex models is now readily available. Autocorrelation is a useful method for determining the characteristics of a sequence and for subsequently testing whether a regression model is a good fit. The examples in this chapter illustrate how sequences can be modeled by iteratively refining and testing increasingly complex regression equations. We have given examples, but it is difficult to give more prescriptive methods because the regression analysis chosen will be determined by the characteristics of the sequence being investigated. Sequences of nominal scale data can often be analyzed by extensions of the nonparametric test described in Chapter 18, although care needs to be taken when analyzing the data for true transitions. Records of repeated occurrence can be used to extract summary data from which analyses such as regression can be used to test for changes in the frequency of occurrence and whether the event is occurring at random. Considering the numerous pitfalls and the complexity of some methods, it is important to seek expert advice when analyzing and interpreting complex sequences. Finally, it is most important to realize that extrapolation beyond the range of a sequence may be unreliable, however good the fit of any model to the data within it. 21.16, Questions. 1. The table below gives the turbidity of water in a tailings dam for 48 consecutive months from January 2005 to December 2008. Use a statistical package to graph turbidity against month and then run an autocorrelation analysis. Are there any obvious seasonal trends? Are there any significant autocorrelations? What can you conclude from the results? 2. Explain why a statistician said, quote, autocorrelation is very useful for relatively long sequences, but for a sequence of 20, the significance of any autocorrelation means little, especially at high lags, unquote. 3. The data in the table below are for summers when heat waves occurred with a heat wave defined as a continuous sequence of 5 or more days on which the maximum temperature exceeded 40 degrees centigrade at Port Nundy in southern Australia from 1850 to 2009. You've been asked to test the hypothesis, quote, the frequency of heat waves has not changed from 1850 to 2009 at Port Nundy, unquote. A. What analysis would you use? B. What can you conclude from this analysis? And C. Do heat waves appear to occur at random during this temporal sequence?